we're really doing a history of the process of your experience. And there's nowhere to start better than at the beginning. And I'm going to ask you your name.
My name is Michael Donovan.
And where you were born?
Boston, Massachusetts.
And can you tell me something about your family? How many siblings you had? Something about your parents?
I have two brothers, Tommy and Kevin. Tommy passed away of HIV. I have two sisters, but they're different. My mother remarried, so my father was left when I was young, so my mother kind of raised all of us.
And at what point did your father leave the family?
When I was like 4 or 5 years old, I guess.
I'm going to ask you to speak up a little bit because of the... That's all right, or come closer if you don't mind. When you were 4 or 5?
Yeah.
And did she work?
Yeah, she worked 2 jobs after he left to take care of us.
So it was a hard go.
Yeah.
What did she do, may I ask?
When I was a kid, she drove school bus. Mm-hmm. And then she did all the things, had small jobs.
Mm-hmm. Did you see your father? Was he supportive in any way, or did he really just disappear?
He's gone.
He was gone.
Yeah. I found him a couple of times, but he wasn't. I found him, he didn't want to find me, so it was kind of wasn't with it. His loss, I figure.
At what age did you discover that you had hemophilia, and how did that develop for you?
They found out from my brother Tommy, and then obviously. Once they knew he had it, they checked us, and all three of us had it.
Mm-hmm. So you were very young.
Oh, yes. I started getting injections by when I was 3 or 4 years old.
Mm-hmm. That must have been incredibly difficult for your mother. She's alone. She's working 2 jobs.
Well, because my father blamed her for us having what we had.
He did. Would you say that was one of the primary causes of the breakup with that marriage?
I don't think. I think there was a lot of other things involved in it, but, you know, I think he thought, probably in his eyes it might have been. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I don't know. I never really got a chance to know him long enough to find out what his deal was, you know what I mean?
What was her experience of the disease in her family?
She was unaware of it until she had Tommy, my oldest brother.
So it came as a complete surprise to her.
Yes, exactly.
He had a bleed.
Yes. And then it was late 50s, they still didn't really have a clue to what it was. It took them a while to figure it out, you know. It's not like... obviously, like I said, they checked us. We had a moment of going to find out if we had it or not.
Where were you treated?
Boston Children's Hospital.
And from your earliest memory of being treated, what would you say about that service that was provided?
It was actually, it was pretty harsh back then. It was nothing like it is now.
It was harsh?
Yes, it was like, a large quantity of like a frozen plasma type substance. It's the best way to explain it. It was cold, it was putting you cold, it made you cold, and it made you really ill. Well. If the nurse or whoever was giving it to you and gave it to you too quickly, it made you really ill. And I remember that from when I was like 4. That's something you don't forget.
Can you describe the experience?
When you're 4 years old and somebody's sticking needles in you, it's kind of, like that. I despise needles at this point in my life. I don't like them. I don't like them put in me. And doctors find that hard to deal with it. Because, you know, I'm 42 years old, I should be willing to take a needle by this guy.
You've had too many.
Yeah. And now it's a lot easier now. It's kind of nothing, really, but, it was pretty bad back then.
What was the attitude?
It depended on who it was that was giving it to you. Do you know what I mean? Some nurses were obviously a little bit more compassionate about a 4-year-old getting an injection, and the other ones were just in a hurry and wanted to get on with their job, you know what I mean? That's just the way it was.
And do you think that they understood hemophilia and what was happening to you, or...?
No, I don't think so, not at all. I really don't. Because, I mean, the reason, like, I have a lot of health issues now because the doctor that first diagnosed it, when mother took him to Children's Hospital, because there was three of us, he kind of told my mother not to baby us. But,
he told your mother not to baby you?
Well, not to, like, you know what I mean? Not to live in LA, so to speak. I mean, not to, obviously not go play professional football or anything, but don't, you know, I fix cars for a living, so I'll tell you something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way she raised us, not to let it limit us.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But, I've always tried to avoid the injections whenever possible. I've only had them if I absolutely had to. This is probably why I'm still sitting here in front of you.
I see.
Well, no. Mm-hmm. You know the deal with the, it hasn't been good for us. You know, most hemophilics that are my age or a little older aren't it. I guess I've caused myself a lot of health issues now because of it, but I'm still here, you know what I mean? So.
How often did you go to hospital from the time you can remember? Were you there often?
No. Like I have, like see that big scar right there?
Mm-hmm.
I was like 5 when I got that. I didn't go to the hospital for that.
And this was because you really had a great dread of
That, and like I said, my mother was told not to baby us or run to the hospital every time we were hurt. And that's, like I said, that's the way we were raised.
Can you describe the times that you were injured and you didn't go to the hospital, what they were like? It must have been frightening.
Well, I wasn't really raised to be that afraid of it. Do you know what I mean? I mean, but the bruises were, obviously, they're excessive. I mean, I don't get a dime-sized bruise, I get bruises. So, yeah, it was kind of scary, like, when you don't stop bleeding, or when you first hurt yourself, you don't know how bad it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But, again, we weren't raised to be as timid about it or scared about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, Kevin's the same, my brother Kevin's the same, he is now. Has never limited himself.
What about the pain? Do you remember the pain of going through those bleeds?
Oh, absolutely. I live with it every day now because my joints are all jammed because of it. You know what I mean? Well, that's what I kind of avoided the whole medical industry because for a long period of time, like if I go to any doctor other than someone that's knows about hemophilia and tell them that I have something wrong with me, they just kind of like, they don't understand, you know what I mean? Like, I told my doctor that I had serious pain and joint issues and all this stuff going on like 10 years ago, and they just told me that it had nothing to do with my hemophilia. And now that I'm involved with the Hemophilia Association and the people at Brigham Women's, I've learned that it's obviously a lot different. So, a lot of people just don't know about it.
Doctors included.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know.
And how have you coped with the pain? You just ride through it?
Yeah, most of the time. Yeah. And then, I've recently become involved with the Hemophilia Association at Brigham Women's. Elise Mandel and the other people there, and they actually know what a 40-year-old hemophilia feels like. Kevin, my brother Kevin's the same way. He deals with it every day too. At least there is somebody that knows, you know what I mean?
So, mm-hmm.
And I work 50 hours a week, so I kind of do just deal with it and live with it,
mm-hmm.
You know.
And did they give you ways to help deal with it?
I take pain medication when I need it, but I mean, that's also, I have a job that requires me to be fully functional. No, I can't be taking pain medication, you just learn to accept it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I met a couple other hemophiliacs that were my age at a charity event I did with the Hemophilia Association, and they kind of described the same thing, which just, your joints just junk out on you, I guess. And then, obviously, the injections have infected most of us. I mean, I have some. That's, I can't change that, but I also don't drink. I do anything to put myself any further in jeopardy than I already am because of it, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Tell me a little more about your mother. Here she is. She's working two jobs. She has a new situation to deal with.
Yeah.
Sounds to me that she was very courageous. And
she's very strong. She's 82 now, and if you met her, you would never think she was 80. You know what I mean? She's always, you know, she's always done everything she needed to make sure we had what we needed.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't live like kings, obviously. I mean, she was a single mom with four kids, well, five count Pat, but Pat was older when I was a kid, so, and she raised us by herself.
Mm-hmm.
So, she's like,
Did she educate herself about the disease?
About stopping the bleeds, yes, but none of us educated ourselves about what it would do to us when we were 40.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know I can make myself stop bleeding, no matter how big or, you know what I mean, know how to do that, but I didn't, we didn't educate ourselves, I guess.
Not into the future, only
yes.
For immediate
and
care.
Then, you know, when you go through the injections like they used to be, and let me see, I just cut myself, and if I just put ice on it and don't go there, it'll be all right in a few days. Instead of going and having them jam that frozen plasma product in me, I'm going to pick the ice right, you know what I mean? And avoid the needles and the,
mm-hmm.
the hospital and everything.
You're the first person I've heard mention that it was iced.
It's, well, I mean, that's something back, way back when it was cold.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about 60s, 70s,
mm-hmm.
It was cold. That's just one of the memories that stuck in my head from when I was a kid, that it was cold
mm-hmm.
at Children's Hospital.
I'm sure it did.
What
was your mother's attitude, or the family, their attitude within the family about telling other people?
That wasn't really an issue. It was, it wasn't something that nobody ever really got to know unless they knew you personally. It
mm-hmm.
wasn't, you know, like I said, she didn't let it limit me or limit us in any way. We still did everything. Like, I took gym in school. I did everything everybody else did. You know what I'm saying? I didn't alter my life because of
mm-hmm.
it. I mean, I did, but I didn't. You know, I knew my limitations.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
so. But you didn't live in fear?
No. And if I don't know, I mean, I live with the pain. I see what I live with fear, you know what I mean? It's just...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You went out to school, and did you tell people at school? Did people at school know?
Some did, yeah. But if you told somebody, I mean, even today, you could tell somebody you have hemophilia, and they really don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
They say, oh, bleeder, but it's not really, it's not a bleeder, that's a totally different... I mean, yes, I do have a blood disease, but I'm not, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
People just really don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, even most doctors don't know the residual effects or whatever, or, you know what I mean? The long-term overall effects of it in life,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? Most people don't, so.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't really an issue, people knowing I had it or whatever. I mean, some people, obviously, if they knew it, when we were in school, they were stupid about it, but. Nobody ever did anything crazy.
But that wasn't a large part of your experience.
No. So, you know, it was... The biggest thing was I had an ear infection once. I remember this forever, too, because some guy was trying to scrape the inside of my ear or something, and the person that had come out of the room before me had blood on the side of his ear. The guy knew I was a hemophiliac, and it took, three of them tried to hold me down. I was only like 10 or 11, and they couldn't hold me down. I wouldn't let the guy stick it in my ear. I wasn't going to let him make me bleed. And I, like, really freaked out.
You know, so at Children's?
No, it wasn't at Children's, no. Children's was... The actual medical staff that was involved with, like, whatever things was happening, it was just the actual putting in of the Creole, because that's what it was called way back then. It wasn't called Factor VIII. It wasn't called, you know what I mean? It was
mm-hmm.
way back when it was something different. It was just the people that put the actual injection into you. I can't even explain. It just overwhelmed you if it went in too quick. It was, I just can't. I was talking to Kevin about that a couple months ago because something reminded us how we played on a joke on one of the other kids that was in the wood with us. And we always remembered that. And then we started talking about it. But
what'd you do?
No, we just took some kid's teddy bear, we were playing around, we put it in the elevator, we sent it down. And when the elevator came back up, the kid's monkey was gone, and he started screaming, I want my monkey back. And I mean, Kevin, we ended up going there, but whatever, it was just, we always remembered it, and it's just a little joke between us that we've got a whole legend. But we always remember the, because I actually got sick on one of the nurses once because I kept telling her, I'm going to get sick if you don't slow down, I'm going to get sick if you don't slow down, because I knew at that point, I was like 5 or 6, I already knew.
And they just wouldn't do it.
No, because like, it used to be a lot. It wasn't a little needle, there was a quantity to it. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't mm-hmm. it wasn't a powder and a liquid, it was a right. it was a quantity of whatever it was, plasma.
It was a sack.
Friol or whatever. Yeah, it was, I can't remember what it was called, but it was a lot of it. And it took time.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't want to take time. Some of them, some obviously were more caring than others, like I said. But.
And you were sick on her.
Yeah. And I remember that,
right.
To this day. I'm like, I gotta slow.
I told you.
That's why me and Kevin joke, we actually, we make jokes about it because something you just don't forget in life. And I guess it's kind of like what was I went to one of my doctors and I said something to him. They go, well, you just don't like doctors, do you? And I'm like, that's not that I don't like doctors. It just, there's always a gray area when you're a hemophiliac and you go to a doctor and he's not a hematologist.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Or how many 40-year-old hemophiliacs are there? We talked about that, not many.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody really knows what it's like to be, what you really feel like, so.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that before. People saying they go into emergency rooms and people just don't have a clue what to do with it.
And then like I actually have to carry a sticker of the exact type of injections I take in my wallet because when you try and tell them what it is, they don't know and then they want to give you something that has risk factors to it. And I'm like, I want no risk. I already had you've already given me my disease. You're not giving me any more. Just give me this because it's not going to give me anything. And you literally have to show them what it is most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, there's, I understand, though, there's not a lot of hemophiliacs, so why would it be common knowledge for anybody to know what, what is involved with us or treating us? Or
what you feel like.
Yeah, especially like, I'm really not a wimp. I fix guys for a living, but the pain is, I have big bone spurs in my ankles now. I have no fluid left in my joints. It's, it's gonna, I've been going to a specialist and it ain't gonna get any better. It's just gonna get worse, so. Like I said, if I'd known that 20 years ago, I still don't even know if I would've taken the injections because my brother Tommy died like, 84, 85? Maybe it was 85, 86 of HIV from an injection. And back then, when you got it direct from a blood product, you died quick. It wasn't like they had a lot of medications to slow it down or whatever,
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of make you get away from injections as well, And then you find out 15 years later you got hep out of it anyways.
So, your brother Kevin?
Mm-hmm. Still alive and well.
He's still alive and well.
His hep is worse than mine because his liver functions are elevated and all that. But.
And your brother who died, tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, we were all in a major car accident in Providence, Rhode Island, and at Native Clinic, Roger Williams Hospital treated us in Providence. And right after that, a short time after that, Tommy became very sick. And it was because the products that he was given there, of course, the hospital denies that it was their products, that they had any doing involved in it, of course, because it's always the, it was an us thing. And then, he had a son, family, everything. So I realized that's one thing that, kind of hurt my mom a lot.
I'm sure it did. And you were all in the car accident together?
Yeah. Kevin.
And you, did you refuse treatment, or did you not need it?
I had a fractured skull and a crack my ankle or something. I didn't let them give me an injection. Kevin had to get 72 stitches in his face, so they gave it to him, and Tommy actually broke every bone in his face. So they, obviously they gave it to him too, but I was still functional enough that I was 18 years old or something like that at that point, so.
And you just said no.
Yeah, because that's the way I lived. I didn't live to every. I didn't run to the hospital every time I hurt myself.
Do you remember, as I'm sure you do, as it began to be clear that your brother was seriously ill?
We, when Tommy got really, really sick, we brought him home to my mother's house and took care of him at home.
Mm-hmm.
So, because he wanted to be with him.
What was the dawning of the enormity of what was happening from the transfusions? Can you remember the kind of...
Well, when we actually found out that they were killing all of us. I mean, it's kind of blunt, but it's true, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the first thing you had to do was go sit there and get yourself tested to find out whether that, you know, whether it wailed you or not. And we just found out it was just, well, because I say just half, but it's like, it's, even that's like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's just, that changed your life a lot right there, you know, personally and everything, so.
Of course it does. What was your, I know it's a stupid question, but did you feel really angry, and who did you feel angry towards?
I don't think it was angry. I just, you gotta wonder what would make somebody that greedy, that they'd sacrifice people's lives for a couple bucks. You know, I don't live that way. I don't understand why anybody, and you know that guy's sitting on a yacht somewhere, sipping pina coladas, and you know what I mean? And there's thousands of people dead because of him.
And how does he live with himself?
Yeah, but he seems probably lives all right with himself, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, this, you can't change a lot of people out there, I guess. You know, and this, it's just, I wish they could live with what it did to, like, my mom.
Tell me about your mom and all this. She never married again.
She got with somebody else, but, you know, they never, it never, it didn't, it wasn't a permanent thing. No, she just, you know, she took care of us all until we went on our own, you know. But when, you know, when her son died, that was huge. To this day, it still bothers her.
I'm sure it does.
Yeah. And then, you know, like me and Kevin are sick too, so like, if you can, I mean, if you know, it's like anything, if it takes a switch, I mean, nobody really tells you. I mean, I don't know if that takes out of the step, and I could go in a year, you know what I mean? I don't think there's any set thing with it, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I try and do the right thing all the time. And, you know, like I said, Kevin ain't doing too well. I don't think he won't tell anybody, so.
Are you both living? Does Kevin have a family, or
yeah,
is he?
Yeah, Kevin has a family. My nephew, we just went to the Caribbean together. He's 14. And I moved home about a year ago to take care of my mom, because she's, like I said, she's 82 now, so.
What's her name?
Martha.
Martha,
yeah.
A pretty name.
Yeah. And, she's like, she actually made me enjoy my life instead of living, you know, living it. Yeah, because, like, I met some people, they had children at a charity event. It was a softball game this summer. And, like, they were all so scared about their kids and what was going to happen and, you know, this. And once they knew I was 40 and had it, they, like, really wanted to ask me a lot of questions. And I'm, like, not the person to ask the questions because I didn't do what your average person does. My mom made sure we didn't, you know, not do this or not do that. And was there a risk? Maybe. But did we limit our lives? No.
Mm-hmm. You know?
So, it's a good thing that she was strong enough to, you know, live with us. I mean, think about what it was like for her when I came in with blood pouring off me or you know, bruises this big or, you know, any broken bones. I mean, I've broken a lot of bones. And I've broken bones and never had an injection. I've had bruises that went from here to here and didn't go get an injection. I never wanted them.
Did this all really go back to the doctor who told her not to limit you?
The way she raised us, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to say whoever that guy was in Children's Hospital kind of made it you know, the way it was. And if some guy had said, oh, geez, don't let him do this and don't let him do that, then she would have went home and, oh, God, I can't let him do that because then it says it's going to be that, you know what I mean?
Was it good advice?
I'd have to say, well, yeah, but, I mean, yes, it was, but, like, now, the way my joint issues are, should I have taken the injections? Should I have went to the hospital every time I hurt myself? Would I have the pain I have now if I had done that? But then again, would I have went rock climbing? Would I have played hockey? Would I have rollerbladed? Would I have, you know what I mean? Would I have done motocross? Would I have done everything if I had lived a different way? Probably not. So, yeah, it was the right thing for me.
It was dangerous advice in a way.
Yes, but it also gave me a life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I'm not saying that hemophiliacs don't have a life, but I mean, if you live like you walk on eggshells, your life is going to be limited, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you live kind of cautiously, but still, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
She kind of took away that, she gave me a gray area, so to speak, you know what I mean? It wasn't yes or no, there was kind of a, well, give it a whirl and see what happens. And then, like I said, we weren't taken to the hospital all the time.
Did she come from an environment that was difficult herself?
I think her childhood was really rough.
So she had a lot of inborn courage from what?
She was, like, well, she was born in the 20s, 22, right?
She was born?
In 1922, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she saw some stuff growing up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, she's like, you know, she's just a caring person, too. It's not like she's like, you know, she had us live the way we did because, you know, she just didn't want to deal with it. It was because she cared enough, you know, she's just that type of person. She wants people to enjoy what, you know.
Mm-hmm. Did you have grandparents around?
Never met them.
You never did?
No.
Not on either side?
No, because when my father left his side of the family, which I might ask him, you know, Donovan, I probably have 1,000 relatives in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
I've never met any of them. Because when he left, he blamed her, and then, of course, his side of the family blamed her, so. And then we went up, and we actually lived in Holton, Maine for a while.
In Holton, Maine?
I worked on a potato farm.
That's way north, Aroostook County?
Yeah, right by Prescott. Last
Excellent.
Exit before the Canadian border.
Why did she take you up there?
Did she
didn't come from there?
No, it was, after she had was out separate with my father, she met somebody else and he talked her into selling the house she owned in Eastern Massachusetts and moving up there, I think. So, I mean, again, but I was just a kid then, so I don't know what the
That's
exact
really
were.
Remote.
No, it was like no TV stations, you know, it was backwards.
Nobody's heard of hemophilia there.
No, they didn't know much about it. So there was like, and we were up there for like 4 years, so, and like I actually took the tips of my fingers off once, and my stepfather, well, I call him my stepfather, he didn't even take me to the doctors or nothing. He just kind of, I mean, that's why they're all deformed and screwed up, because he didn't take me to the doctors. So he wasn't quite like my mom. He was just a little different, you know. My mom had seen how bad this was, she would have taken me there, obviously, because that was really, really bad. And it took like a month for it to heal, because I didn't get injected. And I was in Holton, Maine, which was another thing, you know what I mean?
Now, Holton, Maine is hard if you don't have hemophilia.
Yeah, never mind with it. And, like, even when I went to the doctors, they didn't really know what to do with it. And, like I said, we became very good at making ourselves stop bleeding. And,
with ice.
Yeah, and butterfly stitches, you know, not, because even way back when, they wouldn't stitch you. They only used butterfly stitches. They wouldn't stitch you like they do now, do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, they didn't stitch us way back when. Something about the sutures wouldn't do something out. They had more bleeding out, whatever the deal was, I don't know.
How old were you when you came back from Holton, Maine to Boston?
I was in like 17th grade. 15? No. And then we lived in Whitman, Massachusetts.
In Whitman, Massachusetts.
Whitman. And then, like, most of my teen years, I rarely saw a hospital. Didn't want to see him. I didn't have to be involved with plasma or any of that.
What about Billy and Kevin?
Kevin's kind of the same. You know, I mean, if we didn't get hurt, it wasn't happening. You know what I mean? I mean, hurt bad. You know, I mean, like I said, breaking a finger or something like that, or, you know, That wasn't, we didn't go to the hospital for that.
Billy?
Tommy.
Oh, Tommy, I'm sorry.
No, Tommy was the same. He fixed cars for a living. Mm. You know what I mean? Kevin kind of does the same thing, but he does electronics and electrical systems. He doesn't, in cars, he doesn't do the actual mechanics part. We've all just, no, we never, like I said, we were never raised to run to the hospital when we hurt ourselves. Mm-hmm. I'd have to be really hurt. And that's why, I think that's another reason why doctors think that when I do go to them, that I'm like not quite on the up and up, so to speak, because I don't run to them for every nick and scratch and mm-hmm. ache and pain. When I go, I'm hurting, you know what I mean, so.
Did you have any support network? Did she have friends? Did you, or was it just in family?
There was no, we never, that wasn't, it's not like, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, it wasn't like it is today. I mean, I couldn't go to school and say, oh, I need some of this because I'm too hyper. It was just, you know, it was called life and you dealt with it and you went on with it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The support network was the family that we helped each other when we needed it. You know what I mean?
You went to high school in Whitman?
In Whitman, yeah. And then
high school?
No, it's not big. Mm-hmm. It's Whitman Hanson. It's two towns, actually, in one high school.
Would you say that was, generally speaking, a good experience, school?
It wasn't. It wasn't. I knew that's where I wasn't going there in life. I mean, I got a degree in electronics because I do automotive repair. So, but I'm in the electronic end of the automotive repair, and I knew that's where I was going. I wasn't going to be a pencil pusher, so to speak. So. You know what I mean? At high school, I did well. I'm not
mm-hmm.
you know, dumb by any means, but it wasn't a bad experience. But I also, like I said, I knew I was going somewhere else after I got out of high school.
At what point did you decide you were going into automobile?
My Tom, the guy who lived with my mom for a few years, actually owned a garage while we were up in Holton, Maine.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked there from the time I was, like, I don't know, 8 to whenever. That's why now I'm pretty successful at it.
And you got to know cars.
Yeah, for really well. So
you knew that's what you were going to do, and you knew you were good at it.
Yeah, so, and you know, but I mean, obviously, you know, I tell people how I feel like when I tell them I fix cars, they're like, yeah, okay, sure you do. I'm like, no, that's what I do for a living. And you know, I look at my hands, it's nothing nice, you know what I mean? But, you know.
Do you have your own place, or do you work for someone else?
I work at a Ford dealership. Yeah, you know. The car world is like, you're better off, well, in my opinion, you're better off working at a dealership. That's where the education is. They send you to school. There's no,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's no, I would not leave myself hanging out there. There's too many obligations to people and things.
Do they know your history?
They know I have hemophilia. I couldn't lie to them about that because if I told them I didn't have it and then they discovered it and they, you know, decided they didn't want me there anymore, that would be, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That gives them a way to kick me out, but if I'm level with them up front and they bring me in the door, then 2 months down the road, they can't use that as an excuse to dump me, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So to speak. I mean, not that anybody would do that, well, maybe you would, but I don't know.
Has that ever happened to you?
A couple times something like that has happened, but, you know, like I tried to go in the military, that's not happened. I don't feel like I cannot get into the military.
So tell me about that. When was that?
I was 17.
You were born in what year? You were born in
1962. So I was what? 72. Yeah.
And you applied to go into the military.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a medical form you have to fill out. As soon as it said hemophilia on it, they said, no, it's, you know, obviously they don't want me, well, I mean, going out and whatever, getting shot or whatever happens, you know, they don't want any part of that. So that was the government shut your ear. That was fine.
Did that surprise you?
Kind of, because it's not like everybody in the military has to be on the front line. I'm a mechanic. You know what I mean? How often, you know, I mean, it shouldn't it be my option if I want to risk myself?
Well, it shouldn't. You're also looking at the government who sponsors non-discrimination.
Yeah. If you're him, if you're like, you know, getting in the military. Well, back then, I don't know, I object, obviously, but back then it was pretty cut and dry. As soon as they saw it, they were like, no, see you later.
Any jobs that you've not been able to secure?
No, I'm really good at what I do, so that's not really an issue with people. I mean, you know what I mean? I'm sure in the back of their mind they might think about it, but once they see my qualifications, so to speak, they don't really. I've been working for Ford for probably 15 years now, so they actually, if you mention my name at this dealership, they've probably heard of me, and they've probably heard me at other dealerships because I've been around so long, you know what I mean? It just gets that way after a while. So yeah, the job's not really an issue.
So you're happy with your professional life?
Yeah, except, again, I got to reflect back to the pain issues I have now, and that's, you know, I'm on my feet 10 hours a day. I don't know how many more years I got in me. But yes, my career, it did not stop me from doing well. I should have got into something that didn't involve using my body as hard as I use it, but I didn't. I'm happy. I'm good at what I do, so I don't second guess that.
You have pain in your knees and your ankles, your wrists?
My elbows, my shoulders, any joint that I pop all the time. You know what I mean? It's I'm arthritic. They did a bunch of x-rays actually recently. I have severe bone spurs in both my ankles, which has limited the mobility. Eventually it's going to become zero mobility, but once that happens, the pain in my ankle should diminish. I just had arthroscopic surgery on my knee. I guess the biggest issue was that you're supposed to have a layer of liquid in between your joints, and I basically have zero on my ankles at this point. And they gave me cortisone on my shoulder several times already because it's junk. I wake up in pain. My hip, there's something wrong with that. They said it's an old injury or something, but I don't even remember hurting my hip. Put it away. I was raised.
And when you have a particularly bad day, you have some medication, you say, but do you just find that you adjust to it?
Sometimes you can't adjust to it. It's, like now that I've sat here for an hour or half an hour, however long we've been here, when I stand up, I'll know I sat down for half an hour after I worked all day. It's like when I don't usually sit down at work. I take my lunch, but I usually eat it on the go, so I'm always up.
Mm-hmm.
But once I let myself get down and lay down or sit down or relax, that it kind of, I stiffen or whatever happens, and then when I stand up,
You have a problem.
Yeah. So usually I actually do electronics and stuff like that at work, so it's not like I can take pain medication while I'm at work, so, you know what I mean? But, and also, Elise was kind of worried about me taking pain medication now because I'm only 40 and it's going to get worse, and, you know what I mean? There's a medication issue there, and also the way the world is today, obviously, when I was going to my other doctor and trying to explain to him the pain I was in, I told you he didn't understand hemophilia, so they just kept kicking me to the curb for years. And now my bone spurs are significant, really big.
And they could have done something.
I didn't even ask because I don't question things like that, because that would probably upset me because I have serious issues now because of it. And maybe years ago they could have went in there and trimmed them off or whatever, but now I have very little mobility left in my ankles.
What do you think when you look ahead? Do you have?
I'm figuring 50. Honestly.
Is it fearful for you?
No. To be blunt, it ain't nothing nice. I have a good life. I have people that I care about to care about me, you know? I've been reading online. I heard that I lose 10 to 15 years right off the rip just having hemophilia, and then I got the bad blood from whoever, and sure, that can help me down the road either, you know what I mean? I'm 42 now, so. Yeah.
Hello?
He lives next door.
No, I don't think there's anybody here.
So, could have got there from me.
And do you prepare yourself, or do you just go where it goes?
Honestly, I travel all the time. Whenever I can travel, I travel.
You do?
Yes, I do everything I can now, because who knows?
And where do you like to go?
I go to the Caribbean a lot.
You do?
Yeah.
What do you go and stay at a resort or a...
Business a lot.
You do? You go... with your family or
yes,
with friends?
Yes, I'm single, so I used to travel with my mom or my sister or my brother. Or,
mm-hmm.
You know, like last time, me and my mom, I just went about a month ago, I took my nephew, AJ. He's 14.
So, what else do you like to do?
No, I mean, right now I work so much that, I mean, you know, I go to Foxwoods, I play poker tournaments.
You do?
Yeah. All the time.
Actually, I watch them on television.
I play them all the time.
I
actually play online and win a lot.
Do
I
you?
Finished 50th out of, like, 300 last time I was down at Foxwoods.
Do you
those
really?
Are people that play, like, religiously all the time. So
when did you start poker?
About a year ago, I guess.
A year ago?
Yeah.
Is that your first card experience?
Yeah. Pretty much. I used to just kind of play. Because my mom really likes the casino, and now that she's as old as she is, I take her.
Mm-hmm.
So she, you know, it's good to get her out of the house. But I used to just go out and play slot machines. But now that I play cards, it's like, why would I stick money in him?
And why did? What made you start?
I found it somewhere, and I just started playing it, and then I got to like it. So
found you were good.
I'm all right at it, I guess.
And you play online?
Yeah, I make it to the final table quite a bit online, so.
Okay.
You know, like I said, I did good in Foxwoods, too, so.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm planning on taking my mom. I just had to spend a lot of money to fix the heater in the house, but I'm going to take my mom to Vegas next month, I think, for 3 days. You know, so. Got to get my mom.
I know this sounds silly, but I would think having the experience you've had, gambling would. It's been a gamble all along, hasn't it?
I guess. There's been some pretty scary things in life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we were never raised to be afraid of it.
No. So but in a way, that really puts you in a place where...
Like now, like you said, how do I feel about what's in the future? Like there's no... Who knows? I mean, I'm not dreading it. I'm not, you know what I mean? I really don't think of it daily. Once in a while, I'm like, oh, geez, you know, maybe I ought to take 2 trips this year, or maybe I should go take her out there and do this. And I guess maybe that's another blessing that I'm not waiting until I'm 60 years old to enjoy life.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So.
It is in a way.
If you're raised to just be strong and try and overcome things, maybe that's just a big help in life.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it does end a little bit sooner than everybody else's. Right?
But there must be, you know, when you're playing poker, there must be some strength that comes from that attitude that you sort of naturally have.
Well, yeah, because you really have to be aggressive sometimes when you're playing cards.
You do. And a risk taker.
Yeah, if you just kind of sit there and go, oh, I don't know about this one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But you just go, what's that, whatever, and jump in there and
mm-hmm.
have at it. What do you get to lose, you know?
And then you win, and you win yourself the money for a trip.
Yeah, there you go.
And so it's immediate reward here.
Yeah.
Good for you. I started watching on television.
It's getting really big, too. Like
it is.
Last time me and the guy from work went down to Fox, I couldn't believe all the people that were playing. It was
mm-hmm.
like 300 people. It was a Monday night playing a tournament. It was $100 entries. So.
Do you get a ranking?
No, you just, if you make it to like, I think it was like 40th or better, you got paid, you know, you won money,
mm-hmm.
and I went out like 50th or 48th or something like that, so I didn't win anything, but it was still nice to actually make it that far in a tournament with the guy, because the table I was sitting at, they all knew each other because they played all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they did. I'm like, well, I can't imagine being like that, but, you know.
Is your mother, or you in the family, is faith an issue? Is faith something that you have? Religion a part of your life?
I mean, I'm not like a real religious person, but I believe that you know what I mean? I guess I'm spiritual in a way, but I don't, you know what I mean? I don't.
Could you tell me how?
I mean, I'd like to think that there's more to it than some of the things that get dumped on people on a daily basis. I'd love to think there's something after that's better for people that don't get to be as fortunate in life as others, and that there's something out there that's. It's not, I mean, yeah, you know, I really do believe that things happen for a reason. Maybe me not being here till I'm 60 is going to do something that affects somebody else in a positive way. or maybe my disease or something that's happened to me is going to do something to somebody else.
Can you put your finger on anything you've identified? Or your brother's death, for example?
Tommy firmly believed that there was something after this, because this couldn't be what... I'm not negative, and he wasn't negative, but, you know, we saw a lot of trash, and, you know, a lot of bad things in our life, and, like, I don't know, there's got to be, you know, when he was dying, he believed that there was something afterwards, because it just, you know...
This couldn't be all there is.
Yeah, it can't be. He kind of went his own way, you know what I'm saying? It's hard to explain. His mother was a totally different person than, like, you know, she lived a little different lifestyle than we do, you know what I mean? Not as straight and narrow, I guess, you know what I mean? And then I guess after they broke up and Tommy went his way and Darlene, his wife, had like another bunch of kids. And then she just, like I said, she just lived kind of a really different lifestyle. And obviously that's his mother. So he went, when Tommy finally died, he went back to her side of the family.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really see him too much.
That's too bad.
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, you think, like, my mom had congestive heart failure about 3 months ago when she almost died. And then, like, you know, you'd think these people would have made an effort and come down and said, oh, you know, wow, this could be happening soon, or, you know, blah, 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 and made an effort to come down and say hi or do the right thing. You know, my mother's never done anything right anyway. She's always been there for people. I mean, you know, and she's no saint, but still, you know, I mean,
she's a good person.
Yeah. And, you know, you'd think you'd have enough respect, and he didn't have enough respect to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, none of the people on his side of the, you know, on my brother's wife's side of the family or whatever, none of them came down, so it was kind of... That kind of just bridged the gap a little bit more too, you know what I mean? Well, in my eyes it did, because it's like, that just isn't right.
Mm-mm. You know, isn't right, is it?
Yeah, you know. But that's like, again, I mean, me and the people in my family have a lot to offer somebody. We're not, you know, I'm a very caring, giving person. And, you know, if you decide not to be in my life, then that's your priority. I'm not going to chase you, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I wish you were, but if you don't want to be there, then I can't make you be there.
Knowing that that's true of yourself, what was your choice about relationship?
Now?
Or
I've been single for a long time since I found out about this frickin' disease that they gave me. How you start a relationship. Oh, yeah, by the way, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's like one of the worst things about it. I mean, how do you... that's harsh. Because it's been a long time since I've been... You know, obviously, I don't want to... I'm not going to jeopardize somebody else's life.
You've never been married?
No, never got married. I had a couple of serious relationships and I almost got married, but I just never did. And then, obviously, I found out about the HEP thing quite a few years ago, and since then, like I said, it's not something, you know, I can't just do that to somebody. And then, like, if you tell them, then obviously, you know, it's going to... If you were the person on the other end, obviously you'd be like, holy shit, he's got that. You know what I mean? So, you know, the hemophilia itself didn't really affect anything about relationships, but...
So that was not the issue?
No. Now, though, that I found out that I've gotten, you know, whatever from it, you know, that's... And maybe a woman wouldn't think that, but I don't know that, and I'm not gonna, you know, it's really hard to, like, what do you do? Let somebody get... really close to you and then get to that point and then tell them, or do you just, you know, spit it out right up front so they go, whoa, and then they take 7 steps back, you know? No, you kind of just go, well, no, it's like, it's been, like I said, it's been quite a few years, so. But that's, you know, that's maybe it's just something that's in my own head, but that's like a big speed bump, I guess.
The women you had serious relationships with, they knew you had hemophilia.
Yes.
And that was not an issue.
No. Because, you know, I don't let it limit me.
Mm-hmm.
I live in, if you didn't know me from this and you knew me in life, you'd never know I had it, because I don't do anything different than anybody else. Right, you know, dirt bike, or race of cars, it's not something you'd notice.
I don't want to make you sit too long. I'm just going to ask you about the Hep C and finding out about it. You went for a test.
Yeah. Well, obviously, it came out in a lot more public that it was out there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It was the HIV thing. Obviously, I went for the test for that, and that came back negative. But then I started getting really tired all the time, and that's part of it, you're tired all the time. And I did the test, and it came back positive. So
you had a little reprieve when the test came back negative, and you thought, oh, well, that's fine.
Yeah, well, kind of, but, you know, yes, great, I'm not going to die, you know, but even HIV, you know, they have medication that can keep you around for a long time, you know, but then, you know, once you find out you do have something like that, eventually it's going to catch up to you. It's inevitable, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So no matter what I do or how I live my life, eventually it's just going to catch up, and once it does, with the HEP, I guess it's kind of, if you do switch to that, whatever, there's a desire, it's just like going from HIV to AIDS, I don't know what it is, but your liver just gets really affected, I guess, and, you know. That has affected my life a lot, and then, now there's the pharmaceutical companies that are involved in this are still, they'll deny it till they cash their $1 billion checks next year, you know what I mean? They're just there now, well, and they're like, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but like Ireland has already, like, anywhere that they've given blood to and caused harm and done, they've given them thing, they've compensated them. England's done it, Ireland's done it. It's like almost every country on the planet has, except the United States.
Really?
Yeah. If you want to line a look, I get the Hemophilic Association letters and stuff like that, and it's like one of the richest country in the world, and because of the way things are here. No, and it's not even so much me getting anything out of it. It's that these people actually acknowledge that they did this,
yeah,
and take some frickin' responsibility for once in their life. You know what I mean? Because they won't ever. Like I said, they're sitting somewhere sipping margaritas and on a yacht in the Caribbean,
mm-hmm,
and I haven't dated in 5 years because of it. You know, so
that's a big penalty. It's not the only penalty. Did you receive money for your brother when he died?
My mom did, yeah.
Yeah.
That was different, though, because they set up the Joe Robbie Fund, or whatever it was called. The U.S. government did that. Again, pharmaceutical companies claim no responsibility for anything. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My mom, that's why she's, you know, I mean, she didn't get rich, believe me. It wasn't a huge amount of money, and when it was due to my brother's death, she didn't even really want it, you know what I mean? It was just, you know, but like I said, everything happens for a reason. Maybe Tommy died so my mom could have a comfortable life. I guess if you want to bucket things that way.
You're very active, or active somewhat, with hemophilia groups? And
recently I started getting involved, and I volunteered at a fundraiser, a softball game, and, you know, I told them if they even wanted me to do anything again, feel free to give me a call, and, you know,
mm-hmm,
I have free time, so, when I'm not, I mean, I work a lot, but,
mm-hmm,
yes, I don't drive right now, so, it's hard for me to get to place, but, like, when I had the thing, I can probably understand what it would be like for the parents, because I saw what it did to my mom, you know. Like I said, when the parents saw me at the last thing I volunteered at, a couple of them just kept asking me all sorts of questions, you know.
I know it sounds self-evident, but what would you say it did to your mother over time? Did it just take her life away?
No. If you're my brother Kevin says that my mother didn't do the right thing, and not about hemophilia, but overall, and the way things happened, because she was a single mom, and Kevin's kind of a different person than I am, but I don't think the hemophilia really, limited her, do you know what I mean? It caused her a lot of pain because Tommy died, and every time we got really hurt, it hurt her. You know what I mean? It did hurt her.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't, I don't think it didn't destroy her, you know what I mean?
Right. What would Kevin have had her do differently?
I don't know, because he was just, one night I was at his house, and he was just being weird, and just some of the things he said just kind of didn't sit right with me, do you know what I mean? Because I'm totally the opposite person. I'm like, you know what I mean? I don't live my life. I don't care if I have $100. I'd rather have a walk on the beach than a gold watch.
Like then Kevin, what?
I'd rather like have some. I'd rather have like a good moment in time instead of a piece of jewelry. You know what I'm saying? I'd rather be, you know, like taking AJ to the Caribbean and going. Just walking down, doing something downtown, and where we were, Belize. That to me is something I'll remember forever. I mean, a watch, I can get another one. And I don't look like I make money, but I do all right at my job. But that's not the way I live, you know what I mean? I just,
Do you ever wonder whether you would have had a different attitude?
I don't know if I'd have been as, I think it would have been different, because, I mean, you know, you just, things were different because of my hemophilia, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who knows what would have been different, but I think it would have been different. I might have played sports. I couldn't play sports, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one thing that hemophilia prevented me from in school. That was not allowed. There was no sports. They would not allow.
And you missed them.
Yeah, so I couldn't play, you know, that's why, like, AJ, my nephew, was 14, you know, the one on the trip with me. I go to all his football games, all his baseball games. I'm, like, very active in his, you know,
mm-hmm.
his sporting events. So.
He's a nice little boy?
Yeah, he's a good kid.
Mm.
He wants to go to Vegas with me.
Does he?
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
No.
Uh-oh.
AJ, I don't think you're going to Vegas with me. Give it another 6 or 7 years, I'll take you out there, but not yet.
It is hard after a tragedy to untangle what might have been, isn't it? It's just,
But I mean, see, like my sister and my mom do that a lot. They wonder about what
might have been.
Yeah, and I try not to dwell on what could have been or might have been. I look at what tomorrow brings me. I really, you know, I try. I mean, you know, I can't help sometimes thinking about things, but most of the time it's a momentary thing and I get right back on with my day.
How did your sister fare? What happened to her?
They're not from my father. They're from because my mother's first husband died,
mm-hmm.
and that was Kathy and Pat's father. And then my father was not very nice to them, I think. But I hemophilia didn't really. I mean, I'm sure petrified him when we were kids because we really did get some pretty brutal,
mm-hmm.
And we grew up on farms. We didn't. Pushing the rooms around, and we like, you know.
Not in Holton.
No, and obviously not. We raised 12,000 chickens in Eastern Mass.
Did you?
Yes, we had like, you know, it was a farm. So.
Mm-hmm. That was where you were before Holton.
Yes.
12,000 chickens?
Yeah, but Easton never used to, I mean, Easton now is like, you know, a really nice condo town, blah, 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 whatever. But when we were there, it was
a chicken farm.
And we had 12 acres of land in Easton, you know.
What about Whitman?
Whitman, that was already, it was like, what, middle school, high school, so things were changing at that point. You know what I mean? It was totally different.
So you had a rural life.
Yeah, we moved around a lot. But we've actually lived in Hall of Nantasket Beach since 78, 79. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I've moved a lot. I've lived in California, I've lived in Florida, I've lived in Omaha, I've actually done a lot, you know.
Was that pursuing work and just going?
Just pursuing life.
Pursuing life?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, you ever talk to somebody who spent their whole life in one town and never saw a freaking thing?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, granted, maybe you enjoyed that, but couldn't you have gone and done some things? You know, you've got all this money in the bank and you saved all this stuff, but now you're 60 and what are you going to do? I will not go without when I get older, but I won't be able to, you know, travel as much as I do now, but I will have already done it when I was fully functional.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? I'm like, you know, we both, I don't kid myself, I don't know how many years look at me. Could be 10, could be 20. I highly doubt it'll be 20, but, you know. Like I said, I'll do it like my legs ain't getting better either, so. Do all I can.
What took you to Omaha?
A girl.
That's life.
Oh, God, that was a mistake.
Was it?
Oh, yeah. Omaha, Nebraska, man. That made whole Maine look like a city.
I've been to Omaha.
Oh, yeah. I worked at Sack Brothers Truck Plaza.
Flat.
Yeah.
You worked where?
Oh, Sack Brothers Truck Plaza. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fixing trucks.
There's an experience.
Some crazy amount of money. Like, you want to pay me? What? When I found out that was a good job, I was like, I'm going home. I couldn't believe that. They like just, you know, but they live a totally different lifestyle than we live in. So
yeah, they do.
Everybody's New England's like, they're like pretty uptight up here.
That's right. No, they're very different.
Yeah, thank you.
I agree with you. Is there anything that I haven't asked you? Because I don't want to make you sit any longer. You've been really patient. I'm so sorry that was a complication with the machine.
Yes. I don't really know what to add.
Did you go live in California?
What's that?
You went and lived in California?
Yeah, I did for 2 years.
Girl?
No. I just went out there.
Just went out there?
I found a place to live, got a really good job, and just hung out.
You have a good skill for moving around.
Well, yeah, I moved around a lot when I was a kid.
You did?
I guess my mom gave me that one too. I'm like, I'm definitely not afraid to go like see what happens if I move somewhere.
And she wasn't either.
No. I'm like, now I have $30,000 worth of tools, so wherever I go, if I bring them with me, I won't be unemployed.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So, mm-hmm. But I'm staying home now, take care of my mom. You know, I don't have a big social life. I'm not, you know, I don't date a lot, obviously, because I don't, you know. Because that would be the worst thing at this point in my life. The pain I can live with, but, you know, probably getting older alone is going to be a little rough.
Yeah.
So.
That's
the injections are nothing now, too. The injections are, if I do choose, I keep in my refrigerator now. There's not really much to them. It's a little teeny injection. It's not some big old, cold, nasty, four big syringes thing. It's, you know. It's come a long way.
40 years has made a lot of difference.
Yeah, it's a lot. So, you know. Like, yeah, me and there was another guy, actually a little older than me, at the charity event, volunteering too, and the parents were talking about something. We were talking about, because me and him were relating about the cold stuff way back when, and they were like, really? Well, like, yeah, we're talking. The head came right out of a refrigerator. It was literally a plasma frog, to the best of my knowledge. They called it Creole or something. Yeah, it's come along. But for anybody that's got a kid, tell them to, you know, make sure they do their injections if they have bleeds, because your joints are going to, you know, the other guy said the same thing to his joints, were junk. Kevin's on. And that's from a life of bleeds, I guess.
You know. So that's one of the pieces of advice that you give?
If I met a parent that was, you know, I'd make sure that they knew about my joint issues, because, I mean, other than that, I really don't have fault to have, because, but then it can happen anymore either.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So a hemophilia can actually have a good life, and he was telling me that they have PICC lines that they can leave in them for like 6 months, and they give them the injections for the same thing. It's like, wow. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it was zero risk and that simple when I was younger, I would have taken my injection whenever I needed them.
Of course you would have.
You know? But, hey.
Okay. It's sort of like dentistry, you know.
Oh.
People, it was so horrific.
Mm-hmm. That's why we were at Children's Hospital when I was a kid. A dentist wouldn't touch me.
Oh, I see.
So they took us to Children's Hospital, and we actually spent several days in Children's Hospital.
Having dentistry.
Dental work.
That must have been a...
They were juicing us with that. They had to give it to us like 3 times a day or something like that. They'd wake us up in the middle of the night, bring us down and give it to us. You know, and there was a set pattern that we had to have the injection, whether it was an 8-hour period or whatever. But that's what it was. It was a dental thing. It wasn't, because me and Kevin were in there together, having all
that
the teeth done at the same time.
Quite a time.
Yeah, that's, it did, you know, me personally, Kevin's the same way. Kevin won't go to the doctor unless his arm's hanging off or something. It just didn't happen. It just didn't happen. I could deal with it myself. Mm-hmm. Give me something to deal with the pain. I'll just take care of it, you know what I mean? It kind of sounds sad, but it's the truth. I mean, at this point, what are they going to do for me? And if I hurt myself, I hurt myself. But if it's bad, then yeah, I need them. But if it's not real bad, then I don't. I can call Camark or whoever, they'll come to my house, they'll give me my injections. I don't need to go to Dr. Camark, knows more about it. I call Elise and tell her that I hurt myself. She'll call Camark to have a prescription sent, and have it there the next day injecting. I don't need to go to the hospital for my injections.
Do you find it affects how you feel about people who have suffered a great deal less and think they're in bad shape?
No, because some people aren't. Some people just can't get over the lump or the hump. You know what I mean? It gives them something to live with, I guess. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think my life's that bad.
No.
It could be worse. I mean, you see every day people have got a lot worse than me. What, I'm gonna live a little less and deal with a little pain? And, you know, it's all right, so long as I do the right thing every day. You know, go put my head on my pillow at night and know I didn't, you know, I really believe that, like, you know, I like going home and knowing I did the right thing. You know, if somebody else wants to bitch about something that's minor, then God bless them, because They should probably find something to divert their attention to, so they're not miserable the whole life. You know what I mean?
Would you say you were at peace?
Yeah, I'm like, you know, I really don't have a lot of issues. I'm stressed, my job's pretty stressful, but that's life. I don't hold anything against anybody. I mean, like I said, I wish somebody would step up and admit that they screwed up, at least, you know, and just do the right thing for once in their lives, but that's just, that's probably never going to happen, but I live this. I have no resentments towards my family, my mom, or anyone. Never ever.
She sounds a wonderful person.
Yeah, it's like, why would I blame her because I got hemophilia? She gave me life, so what if she had been known that she was going to give me hemophilia and not had me, then I wouldn't have had any life at all? You know what I mean?
Really?
It's like
yeah.
A big circle. It's like, hello.
Yeah.
Just get on with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That's right.
Stuff happens.
I really appreciate you coming all this way.
No problem.
I really appreciate it. And